Hi, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and you're listening to Capital Hacking with Josh and Eric. This is the most important thing you can listen to today.
On today's episode of Capital Hacking.
Governments and central banks are the two most powerful entities the human race has ever known, ever. And they have standing armies, and they will get what they want, and they will do what's best for them at the end of the day. Inflation-induced debt destruction. That's my trademark term, and it really is the hidden wealth creator for real estate investors. Inflation is a great business plan for governments to reduce their debt. And what I want to do is teach people today how they can do the same thing the government does. If you can't beat them, join them. It's the same practical thing they do to become wealthy through inflation.
I have a dream.
With great power comes great responsibility.
I could do this all day.
Shit, don't get scared now.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom.
Cinderella story out of nowhere.
Did you know that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself?
Capital Hacking begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to Capital Hacking, everyone. As we say at the beginning of every show, even if it's just me, your lovely host here, lovely, very strange word to use, but my name's Josh McCown. I get to enter into a mastermind room, a digital one. We call it a digital audio mastermind. Today is one of the pinnacle days where we get to sit at the feet of someone who has produced more content for all of us investors and people that want to grow our human capital, maybe more than anyone else other than Robert Kiyosaki, who's been on the show. And that is Jason Hartman, who's joining us here today from the Empowered Investor CEO. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Hey, Josh, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, at the beginning of the show, on top of owning the Empowered Investor and running that with a great group, you also, and we hope everyone checks it out right now on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, is you're the host of a great podcast called Creating Wealth with Jason Hartman. And when people go to find your name in podcasts, they're going to find a bunch of podcasts about you. You're one of the most prolific guys I've ever met. But Creating Wealth is famous. We're happy to have you here. But before we go into questions, could you share with our audience a little more about your story and journey?
Sure. I got into real estate in my first year of college. I was only 19 years old. I started on the brokerage side of the business for Century 21 part-time when I was going to college. And then my career took off very nicely. About 6 months into my career, I bought my first rental property. It was a little condo. I bought it actually from one of my clients who purchased it from me and wanted to sell it because he had other investment properties I sold him that he liked better. That was my first rental property at a very young age, just 20 years old. And then my career on the brokerage side took off nicely. I went to work for Remax. I was one of their top agents in the world by age 24. And, worked there for many years, then bought my own company, sold it to Coldwell Banker. And about a year before I sold my traditional real estate company to Coldwell Banker, I got in the business of helping people invest nationwide. And yeah, the reason I did that, Josh, is because I had gone through a couple of cycles. I was in Orange County, California, a very nice high-end area, expensive properties, beautiful area. And, I just went through some cycles and I saw my clients go through a lot of cycles, and getting older and more conservative, I didn't want to do that again. I wanted to be a nationwide investor because I noticed over the years that the markets were many times counter-cyclical. So, the expensive markets, what I call the cyclical markets, the trophy markets of the country and the world, the West Coast of California or the West Coast of the U.S., really, the expensive northeastern markets, Washington, D.C., New York, Boston, Connecticut, where I live now, South Florida. I live in Palm Beach, so nice. Near where I live. These markets have very pronounced cycles in terms of appreciation and depreciation. Well, most of the country is what I call a linear market. They have very smooth appreciation patterns. They just continue to chug along very nicely. They have some minor ups and downs, but they're much more reliable. And so for the conservative investor, those nice, reliable cash flowing markets are better. So I started a company because I had a hard time investing nationwide myself. So I figured there must be other people that want to do this. And so I started a company, became my own first customer, and it all went from there. And so I'm still in the same world now where we help people invest nationwide and build nationwide real estate portfolios.
You do. And I compliment you. I mean, I've watched your programming. I've been on some of your webinars. It's a very thoughtful presentation on everything you do. You know, sometimes let's give a paradigm of one property. Just pull one out of your head from maybe in the last 6 months that you profile for your audience. And then your audience then goes about buying it and then probably putting it into their portfolio. Tell us the life cycle of one asset. Maybe use one as an example.
Yeah. So, you know, we recommend long-term buy and hold investing. And, you know, basically a client will buy a single family home. You know, sometimes people come in, buy one at a time. Sometimes they buy 20 at a time. You know, inventory is very short right now. So it's a big challenge to get them good properties. You know, we recommend they buy properties in 3 to 5 markets, at least 3. Mm. So they're diversified, not more than 5, because it becomes too hard to keep track of. And, you know, so if they want to buy 50 houses, they buy 10 in each of 5 markets, maybe. And we help people do this. We offer education, actual properties they can buy, and then ongoing support and software. I also have a software company called Real Estate Tools.
Yeah, empowered investors. So, you know, we have to get into the nuts and bolts of that for one more second, because we have a lot of wonderful business owners on, not only listening, but also usually on the show, and they built companies. How did you go about building a company that can do multiple markets? What is your model? How do you do it? Get brokers everywhere?
Yeah, good question. You know, I came from the background of traditional real estate brokerage. And, you know, I would go, for example, when I was with RE/MAX, I would go to the national RE/MAX conventions. I might have a spot on the stage and be a speaker if I was lucky, maybe not. But I would always try to develop my referral business and work with other agents around the country on referrals. And so, you know, I had a decent referral business going. And that's basically what we do now, is we have a referral network. We go and make deals with providers of property. Okay. They might be new home builders. They might be rehabbers that do fix and flips. And, you know, there are some other things, too. We don't do any one-off deals. Yeah, we don't do any one-off deals, because we just don't have any leverage to make sure our clients get a good result. So we do like these big ongoing relationships where, you know, we sell a high volume of properties with a small number of what we call local market specialists. And we collect a referral fee on the deal. And then we offer ongoing support for clients. We have live conferences, we have educational programs, and we have software that helps them manage their portfolio. So that's the way it works.
You answered that beautifully and thorough. Thank you for that. Because let's just put it in context. I mean, this is so revolutionary. I mean, I do know a few people out in the world that are big advocates. You know, of course, David Green from Bigger Pockets, big advocates on long distance investing, you know, and the idea that if you're from Southern California or the Bay Area, may not be a good idea to buy a rental property nearby. Might be good to buy a development, who knows, because of valuation changes. We'll have you answer that. But if you're going to invest for cash flow, which it sounds like is part of your core teaching, I think, Jason, right?
Okay.
So core teaching is cash flow. We're going to let you describe that a bit. But if you're going to do that, it's probably not going to be in Southern California almost ever. Therefore, you have developed it's never. Yeah. So you developed a model where you know how to target. You then do. You're almost like an economist. When I think of Jason Hartman, I think of more of an analyst of the entire economy and then down to real estate and then down to micro markets.
Yeah.
Is that a fair assessment of how you run your company?
Yeah, it is a fair statement. We research markets and we research property providers, and then we refer our clients to them. And, you know, I call myself a practical economist. I do like macroeconomics a lot. You know, I just very much like studying that subject. It's maybe why I'm still single, because it's boring. It's boring to most women.
I love that about you.
I love doing that stuff. I love discussing monetary policy and how investors can take advantage of the just profligate, corrupt governments and central banking cartels we have, and you know, I'm happy to share some visuals
by the way, that's right, Jason, this would be great if you want to share some visuals. We'll get this out on multiple platforms, but yeah, for us podcast listeners, which is the core of us, we're going to ask a few more questions about this. I'm hoping the portfolio of slides you pull up relate to your infamous contribution to the American Practical Economics, which is this teaching on inflation-induced debt destruction, correct? Inflation-induced debt destruction. Did I say it okay?
Yes, you did. It's a mouthful, and everybody listening has to say it 10 times fast.
Yeah, but I want to say it one more time because we're about to get taught that, correct, Jason? You're going to explain something that people credit you as a contributor to this practical economics. This is what I want our listeners to know, and if we could really get to the meat and potatoes, everybody sit back. You don't have to drive. Your Tesla will take over. Jason's going to explain this. Grab your pen and paper. Lick the point of the pencil. Inflation-induced debt destruction. Go ahead, Jason. Please share that with the audience.
So it's, you know, for those who are listening only, I'll just explain what the visual aids are. And basically, you know, look, nobody will disagree that the government spends like a drunken sailor. In fact, Ronald Reagan had a great joke about that. He used to say, to say that the government spends like a drunken sailor is an insult to drunken sailors. and that's true. And so spending essentially equals inflation, right? At least the vast majority of economists would say that. There are these people that live in fantasy land who believe in things like modern monetary theory and so forth that might differ. But the fact is, we are in a very inflationary time.
Absolutely.
That I think is going to become a lot more inflationary. So, you know, what I teach is very practical. I say, look, you know, we may philosophically disagree with what the government and the central bank are doing, and I do philosophically disagree vehemently with what they're doing, but look, none of us are going to change it. The powers that be are way too powerful, and what we want to do is align our interests with theirs. Governments and central banks are the two most powerful entities the human race has ever known, ever.
Yes.
And they have standing armies, and they will get what they want, and they will do what's best for them at the end of the day. And what is best for them is to inflate away the value of their currency, because it also inflates away the value of their debt obligations. So it's a very good business plan for governments and for central banks. So that's what they're going to do. Okay. In fact, it's their stated goal. The stated goal of the Federal Reserve is to have 2% inflation. And Jerome Powell, our chair, said recently that he didn't even care if it was much higher than 2%. So you know, they've even abandoned 2%. And so you can see, you know, I'm just showing a chart that the dollar has just lost so much of its value since the Federal Reserve was established. It's absolutely disgusting. Okay. Another thing I've created is the Hartman Comparison Index, which basically helps people understand the value of real estate versus a whole bunch of commodities and services that everybody in the world uses. Most people make a giant mistake when trying to understand whether real estate is in a bubble or it's not, because they just compare it, Josh, to one thing, dollars. And that is extremely misleading. Dollar is a moving target. The value of the dollar is not consistent at all. So why would you compare the price of real estate or anything for that matter to just one item? You must compare it to a whole basket of goods and services, the way the CPI does, and that's very maligned. But that's what the HCI, or the Hartman Comparison Index, does. It compares real estate prices and mortgage payments on real estate to a whole basket of goods. Now, we're not going to have time to cover that today. If you want more information on that, just go to jasonhartman.com or there's actually a free book that explains some of this at pandemicinvesting.com. Okay. So either one of those, you can get more information. Okay. But what I want to talk about is what you asked me to talk about, inflation-induced debt destruction. That's my trademark term. And it really is the hidden wealth creator for real estate investors. And it's just a wonderful thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm teeing this up for our audience one more time, because this is something we kind of barely go over in all these shows. We always talk about, well, if you get cash flow on your assets are going up in value, your debt's going down. In the end, wealth is created because the building is going up in value. You're about to say, yeah, that's only part of the story. So I'm really excited for you to keep going. Take us deeper, brother.
In fact, Josh, I would argue that that part of the story of the building or the house, you know, I've owned apartment complexes, a lot of single family houses. I have a mobile home park now, you know, and all of those things sitting on the land are improvements, right? They're improvements to the land, right? And they do go up in value. But the question is it in nominal dollars or real dollars? And so we'll explore that. And I would argue that that is really like the amateur view of it. I know it's the view most people have, and I don't mean to be insulting about it, but it's just a minor thing. It's not the big thing. So I want to give you the big thing, okay? Not the appetizer. I want to give you the main entree, okay?
Okay.
So, you know, what we're really talking about here is, look, you know, if you think that the dollar is in trouble, which many people do because of government spending, then this is a way to basically short the dollar. And as everybody knows in the stock market, when you short something, you're betting that the value of that thing will decline versus going long is betting the value of it will go up. And, you know, I look around at my own portfolio. I was just talking. I have a mastermind group I run with Ken McElroy and George Gammon. Ken McElroy is the Robert Kiyosaki, very famous author. Famous anyway, we have a business together. It's called The Collective Mastermind. And I was just talking to Ken about this recently. I was saying, Ken, you know, everything I have, I'm long. I'm long on everything. I'm long on gold, silver, real estate, Bitcoin, stocks. I'm just long on everything. And I said, but guess what? I'm short on one thing, the US dollar. Okay.
Yeah.
And the way to short the dollar, essentially for free, actually not even for free, to get paid to short the dollar. Usually when you buy a short, you have to pay for it.
A lot of
short sellers can be destroyed, as we've seen with, you know, GameStop and Tesla and, you know, Herbalife and many others, right? They just get wiped out. But this is a way to get a free short on the dollar. You don't have to pay for it. You'll get paid to do it. So let's dive into that. Okay. So, you know, look, the government spends money like crazy. It's just a foregone conclusion. And that spending is inflationary. The government is in a mess. And when I talk about the government, I'm mostly talking about the U.S. government, but it's really every government around the world pretty much is in the same boat. The U.S. is actually in a much better situation than pretty much every other government, even though, you know, Americans like to criticize it. The U.S. has got a lot of advantages that other countries do not have, and they're not always obvious, okay? So, look, the U.S. government, let's just talk about them, but pretty much it applies to every other government, too. They're in a mess. So what can they do? What do they do to get out of the debt mess? And not only the debt problem, but the unfunded mandates, the unfunded entitlements coming at us over the next 10 to 15 years, which are extraordinary. I mean, the government has made promises galore that mathematically, Josh, it simply cannot keep. It cannot keep the promises mathematically. It's impossible. So what do they do? What are they going to do about it? Well, I've identified six ways the government can get out of their mess. Number one, they could simply default. They could say, look, we've overspent like drunken sailors. Now is the hangover. You know, we've woken up from the party and we've got to cut. We've got a default. I know we've made promises. We simply can't keep them. Sorry. Okay. China, we know you. We owe you money. We're not paying. Sorry. Too bad. You know, Social Security, we know we promised our citizens Social Security and various medical aid and disability payments. And we know we promised all our government employees that they'd get paid. Sorry. we can't pay you. You know, we just can't keep the promise. There's no way. And look, this is unlikely because an outright default will be riots in the streets. We saw what happened in Greece, Spain, Portugal, you know, all over the world when there's austerity measures. The pitchforks come out, okay, and people get very upset. So that's unlikely. Another option is to raise taxes. Well, the problem with raising taxes is, number one, it suppresses economic activity, and it causes money to go where it's treated best. People and their money vote with their feet. And so that's not a great option. But even if it did work, it's mathematically impossible because the GDP of the country is a little over $20 trillion a year. The debt is dramatically higher than that. But the unfunded entitlements and mandates over the next decade are insanely higher than that. So even if you taxed everybody at 100%, you would get the GDP of the country, you know, which also is flawed because it counts government infrastructure projects and stuff like that. That's not really even anything you could tax. Okay. It's the government's own spending.
Right.
So that doesn't work. You can't get enough tax revenue to solve the problem. Completely impossible. Okay. How about if we sell off assets? The country has assets. Look, we have ports we considered selling to Dubai about 10 years ago. We've sold military, high-tech military equipment to enemy countries like Libya. Okay. You know, this is not prudent to do this stuff, right? But we do it because we're broke. Okay. You know, the Bureau of Land Management sells off land to real estate developers. And, you know, there are toll roads in our country owned by foreign governments. So, you know, this is an option to have a yard sale, basically, right? I mean, look, we bought Alaska from Russia. Okay. You know, maybe we could sell it back. Okay. You know, these are options, right? We do have assets. Okay. We could steal. We could use the U.S. military to steal the assets of other countries. And this might sound bad or radical, but look, it's the story of history. History is replete. In fact, I would argue that that's almost every war ever that's been fought is basically thievery. It's, you know, if you look at Napoleon, one of the most famous military leaders in history, he just outright said repeatedly, let's go invade this area because they have gold and art and treasures, right? That's, you know, to the victor belongs the spoils, right? That's just
right,
history.
That's
the map of the world is created by wars, okay? And those then that land is a resource, okay? On the good side, here's the first positive thing I'm going to say. How about technological innovation? Maybe there's some great new innovation in energy, biotech, nanotechnology, 3D printing, whatever it is, right? You know, the space industry, whatever, that creates so much wealth that can be shared not only throughout the country, but globally, that this would be a very positive thing. Hey, let's all hope this happens. We'll see. But the most practical and likely thing is inflation. Because inflation is a great business plan for governments to reduce their debt. And what I want to do is teach people today how they can do the same thing the government does. If you can't beat them, join them, right? It's the same practical thing they do to become wealthy through inflation.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallan. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at AccountableEquity.com.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallan. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at AccountableEquity.com.
Hey, it's Hal Elrod, author of The Miracle Morning, and you're listening to Capital Hacking with Josh and Eric. Enjoy.
As you're going into this, just to chime in on context for just a second. What I heard at the very beginning of your presentation on this, it said, you said, we really aren't here to debate whether we can change the government today, right? And reverse all the momentum and inertia.
Yeah.
But what we could do, and this is your pragmatism coming out, is just learn how they do it and see what parts of what they're doing we can do to benefit our own economy. And it's, you feel it's around this word inflation. So that's, this is the exciting stuff.
This is the hidden wealth creator. Okay. I mean, look at, most people know what inflation is, right? But are they really optimizing the use of it, right? Many very sophisticated investors are not. It's amazing to me. I mean, people that went to Wharton Business School, that own big real estate portfolios, that own companies, they're not really taking advantage of this. And it's truly amazing to me. So, you know, hopefully they will. But first, before we show a real example of how this enriched tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, or even over a billion people, I don't know how many, we're going to look at a real historical example in a moment. But we got to understand a few things first, okay? We have to simply understand that inflation, to understand it, we need to distinguish between real and nominal. So if I held up a $20 bill and I asked you, hey, Josh, what's this? You'd say a $20 bill, duh, what a simple question. And you'd say that today. But what if I was talking to you 20 years ago and I said, hey, Josh, what's this? You'd also say it's a $20 bill because that's the name of it. And that's what nominal means. It means in name only. That's all it is, the name. But the real value of that $20 has declined dramatically. So the name of it hasn't changed, but the value has definitely declined. So we need to understand that. We need to understand the difference between price and value. We need to understand that inflation is this insidious, hidden tax. It is a robber and a thief and a pickpocket that destroys our standard of living. It destroys our purchasing power. But thankfully, after it destroys the value of our savings, stocks, bonds, equity, and real estate even equity and real estate, thankfully, it destroys the value of our debt. And that's why it is the government's business plan, because it diminishes the value of their debt and their other obligations. So they are going to create inflation if it's the last thing they do. And they're already doing it. But they're going to do more of it because it's a good deal for them.
Let's dig into that for a second, if you don't mind. So the logic here is clearly if I had a $100 bill 20 years ago and I'm like, let's hold on to that precious.
See, you've already inflated it. It was a 20 when I talked about it.
You're right. I did. I inflated it because 100 sounds better now. So whatever. So I put it under my mattress and I'm all excited because that could probably buy me a really nice night out at a hotel and a restaurant, all that good stuff. And here
not with a $100 bill, you can't.
Back then, 20 years ago? Maybe.
Well,
not.
Even 20 years ago, no, not the hotel,
You're right.
Yeah.
So I pull it out today, and it just has so much less power, even though it's still nominally called the $100. So I get it. You're saying the inflation eroded that. The really important part is it's somehow eroding debt, too, and you're calling that the ultimate short of the dollar.
Yeah,
and that's exciting to me because it's mind-bending, though, isn't it? Because you and I have heard from many other gurus that debt is the number one thing we should get rid of right now.
Yeah.
If you have debt, get rid of it.
Yeah.
So this is kind of contradictory.
Yeah. They're wrong and I'm right. Okay. Debt is my favorite four-letter word. we're obviously, folks, not talking about consumer debt at ridiculously high interest rates. I do have a lease on my car. Okay. And I have lots of mortgage debt, but I don't have any other debts and I wouldn't recommend any other debts. Okay. Certainly you don't want to have credit card debt or consumer debt, right? But your debt on your real estate is a very special type of debt. Okay. So obviously we're not talking about consumer debt. We're talking about investment grade debt, high quality debt against good assets that hedge inflation. That's the formula, okay? So inflation is the most powerful method to redistribute wealth. Most people think it's taxation, but it's not. It's inflation. That redistributes wealth from lenders to borrowers and from old people to young people. Well, Here's why. From lenders to borrowers, we're going to talk about in a moment. That's going to become very obvious to people. But why would it redistribute wealth from old people to young people? Well, you know, most people think that wealth is redistributed through inheritance upon death, right? But there's actually an intergenerational wealth transfer going on all the time without anybody passing away. And the reason this is happening is typically because of this. Most of the time, hopefully, old people have assets. They have savings, stocks, bonds, and equity in real estate. And young people, unfortunately, mostly have debt. And so it's happening right there between the generations as everybody's still alive. Okay, so let's look at a specific example that really happened to tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, or even over a billion people around the world. Okay, this is not a theory. It actually happened. So I've got a bunch of numbers up on the screen now. And I'm going to start by talking about a house price, the median price home in 1972, which was about $18,000. If you put 20% down on that house in 1972, you'd get a loan for just over $14,000. The interest rate back then was 7.37%. All right, we got that. You got a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. In 1972, because no inflation happened yet, a dollar's worth a dollar. That's how we start the race. But by 1984, George Orwell, you got to read his book, 1984. It's a super important book, and sadly, it's all coming true. Okay? He wrote that book in the 40s, by the way, and he was right. It's all happening, unfortunately. So 12 years later, after these people bought this house, the 1972 dollar is now only worth 40 cents. Mm. The mortgage payment on this house when they started out was $101 per month, $101 per month. So in 1972, they made 12 payments of $101. And in 1984, they kept writing checks again for the same amount of money, $101. But the value of that check felt a lot lighter and easier 12 years later. In fact, that $101 check in 1984 only felt like 40 bucks because of inflation. Inflation had diminished the value of that monthly mortgage payment. And also, it diminished the value of the entire loan balance as well.
Yeah.
So let's go on. Let's fast forward now to the end of this loan 30 years later. By the time they made their last payment, three decades later, remember, this example, by the way, is people living in the house. It's not an investment property. This gets dramatically better with a rental property. But it works even with your own home. So they're living in this house for 30 years. They've paid $101 per month, and all of those payments in nominal dollars, the name of them, totaled just over $36,000. For those of you watching, that's where my mouse is. Okay. Mm-hmm. $36,000. They borrowed just over $14,000. They repaid over $36,000. And they thought they were paying 7.37% interest. But after inflation attacked the value of the dollars, it lowered the real dollar amount of repayment to only $16,393. But the nominal amount was $36,000 and change. So in real dollars, they paid a lot less than in nominal dollars. And the nominal interest rate was 7.37, but the real interest rate was only 1.06%. Pretty good deal, right? They only paid for 30 years 1.06%. And this is not a theory. This happened to millions of people, okay? Like anyone who bought a house in 1972 and kept it for 30 years, this was exactly what happened to them, okay? And, you know, look, you didn't have to buy it then. You could have bought the house in 1990 and paid it off in 2020. It doesn't matter. I mean, the inflation rate will vary a little bit, of course, but the concept is exactly the same.
This okay? is so compelling. I'm looking Isn't it at amazing? It. It's just absolutely amazing. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, so interest on your mortgage is tax deductible. So you not only get inflation diminishing the value of your mortgage, which is wonderful. But you also get taxes benefiting you on paying that mortgage. So after inflation, your interest rate was 1.06%. But after inflation and tax deductions, now everybody's tax rate's a little different, of course, but you know, this is a generic example. Okay. So after the typical tax rate, maybe, your effective interest rate was negative 1.16%. These people literally got paid to live in the house for free. They got paid to live in the house for 30 years. And this is why home ownership has made so many people so rich. But wait, there's more. As they say, I'm a late night infomercial, okay? You know, at 2 a.m. when you turn on that infomercial and you can't sleep, right? But wait, there's more. Well, what if you didn't have to pay the mortgage? What if you outsourced the mortgage to somebody called a renter?
Yeah.
And that tenant repaid the mortgage for you. See, in the 1980s, as you know, anybody listening who was alive then will recall, a lot of people became famous. They were called corporate raiders, okay? And these were people like T. Boone Pickens, Carl Icahn, you know, there were many others, right? And, you know, we all heard their names. They became famous, and the movie Wall Street was built around them, right? And so these corporate raiders, one of their favorite strategies was called an LBO, a leveraged buyout, an LBO. And basically, the way a leveraged buyout worked and still works is like this. You find a company and you make an offer to buy the company and you saddle that company with debt, as much debt as you can pile onto that company. And then you use the company's cash flow or income to repay the debt. You don't repay your own debt. You use the company, you make the asset repay the debt itself, which is exactly what we do with rental properties, whether it be an apartment or a single family home or 100 single family homes. Doesn't matter, right? This is exactly what we're doing, a leveraged buyout. This is what's called self-liquidating debt. Debt would not be fun if we had to repay it ourselves. But if we can outsource that obligation, if we can delegate that responsibility to someone else, the tenant, and what if we could even say to the tenant, look, you know, it's not enough for you to pay my debt for me. I'd like you to give me a little extra every month. So on my little single family home, I want you to give me $250 a month positive cash flow in addition to paying my mortgage and my taxes and my insurance and everything else, right? Then it becomes really, really good. The returns literally, if done right and with some good fortune, of course, are infinite. It's an infinite return scenario, potentially. And this is why income property is the most historically proven asset class in the entire world. Nothing can beat it because of these characteristics.
Yeah. And so to summarize, the inflation-induced debt destruction is, you just proved with that chart, which shows a negative interest rate, you know, in real terms.
Right.
Meaning, in your opinion, you're saying it effectively feels like you paid not, you were paid to live there, in a sense. Yes. That this is, of course, you could be outsourced for rentals. I love that line. This is really the key. Now, does that translate to how you live your life? Meaning, I know you love real estate. You know I love real estate. But are you invested outside of real estate as well? Because this is the question I get. Like, are you in the public markets at all, Jason?
Yeah. I am. For a long time, I wasn't.
Tell us how and why you use the public markets as well.
Look, I think Wall Street's a scam. Okay. I think Wall Street's the modern version of organized crime. I hate it. Okay. But I have a very fortuitous problem that many of my wealthy friends have too. I just find it hard to deploy capital. Like, I mean, you know, it's like a full-time job to deploy your own capital if you've got any degree of wealth. And this is why people open up family offices. They literally hire a staff to deploy their capital. I don't have a family office. I'm not quite that rich, okay? But yeah, you know, it's, I mean, look, it's better than keeping it in the bank.
I get you. So yeah. For you, it's
a I don't love it, but I also am, I want to be a little diversified too. I think real estate is the best thing by far, but the thing real estate takes is it does take some time. You've got to spend some time, number one, learning it. I mean, I know it. Okay. So I don't need to learn it anymore, but I need to learn each deal.
Absolutely.
You know, especially if it's a big deal. Like I'll give you an example. I sold about just a little over a year ago. I sold an apartment complex I owned with one of my clients. We made great money on it. We bought it for about $2.2 million. We sold it for $5 million. It was a great deal.
Great money.
But let me tell you something. That sucked so much of my time because we had like a low income housing deal with it. And it was a local low income housing deal where they'd subsidize the rents and literally they cut red tape lengthwise. It was insane how complicated it was. Buying that deal and selling that deal was so complex. We spent over $100,000 on legal fees and I mean, it was just a monument. I was signing documents. I really honestly have no idea what I was signing. Okay. Like there's just no way it would be a full-time job with a staff to absorb some of the complexities.
Yeah, that's
of that
a great
deal.
Point.
And you know, honestly, this is why I love single family homes. They're so simple. I mean, look, if you have tons of money to deploy, single family homes, they are harder to scale. I agree with that. But, in the past 10 years, we've seen institutional investors scale them very effectively. I mean, American Homes for Rent, Invitation Homes, they own tens of thousands of homes, single family homes.
Yeah.
It used to be that those big institutional investors only did apartments and office buildings and bigger deals like that. But, they know that the single family home is the most historically proven asset class of all. It beats everything. It appreciates the best. It's the most desirable. You get the highest quality tenants and it's simple. And it's also a situation where your tenants can't gang up on you. Okay. They don't know each other. You know, there's no rent strikes with single family homes. Okay. With apartment complexes, they're all talking to each other. They go on Yelp and write reviews about your apartment complex. With single family homes, it's just all fragmented, which has some real advantages.
Do you mind me asking you a practical economics question that crosses our mind recently?
Yeah.
In the world of inflation, which you made a good case at the beginning that they actually want it. So you've made the case that the government benefits from inflation and wants it to some degree. You then showed us debt on a property that's cash flowing is a powerful debt destroyer. But let me ask you about inflation and how it affects rental fees and charges, the rental rate. Do you believe that rents will be able to keep pace with inflation, or will the government eventually step in and slow rent growth with some kind of fiat mandate?
Oh, good question. So rent control does not work and price controls of any sort do not work. They always create shortages. I mean, there's literally a Seinfeld episode about this. Okay.
Remember that
true. Seinfeld episode? Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's so pervasive and obviously known that it made it to Seinfeld of all things. Yeah. Okay. I mean, and I don't want to say now as much because of the pandemic and everything, that's skewed everything.
It did skew everything, okay. Didn't
but,
it?
But overall, for the past 40 years, has there been an extreme shortage of rental properties in New York and San Francisco? Yes. Why? Rent control. If you want to make a shortage of anything, just control the price of it, and there will be instant shortages. I'll give you an example of that. And this is kind of interesting. Up on the camera, I'm going to hold something up for you. One of my podcast listeners sent these to me. These are Zimbabwe dollars.
Okay.
And this Zimbabwe dollar says 100 trillion Zimbabwe dollars. 100 trillion Zimbabwe dollars right here. Okay. And this one is 20 trillion Zimbabwe dollars. Right
oh my
there.
Gosh.
Yeah. these are worth nothing. I mean, you can buy them on eBay for like $4. Okay. They're a collectible. That's it. Okay. And I'll give you an example about Zimbabwe, which is like the poster child for the disaster of inflation and price controls. So they were so irresponsible with their currency in Zimbabwe, and you know, we're not far behind them. Okay. Yeah. And so, you know, every fiat currency, and by the way, fiat just means by authority or yep. by decree, right? So every fiat currency in the world is nothing more. They're all fiat currencies, and it's a race to the bottom. They're all yeah. devaluing, all of them. Okay. So anyway, in Zimbabwe, inflation was so out of control that all the merchants kept raising their prices like by the hour. Yeah. Inflation was so rampant, they just couldn't stay in business without raising their prices about every hour or so. And so the government stepped in and they said, look, you cannot raise prices without our permission or you will be arrested. So what did all the merchants do? They said, well, I can't make this work anymore, so I'm going to stop being a merchant.
Yeah.
Instant shortages of everything. You couldn't get a banana. Okay. You know, everything was in short supply. So if you want to make a shortage, just control the prices. Just ask, you know, the late Richard Nixon and look what happened in the 70s, right? He instituted price controls, which was insane. A Republican president in the United States instituting price controls.
Yeah.
And that's the stupidity of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I mean, they're complete idiots. Okay. These people know nothing about history. Or, you know, maybe they don't care.
Is there a current threat of price controls right now? Is that why you're bringing up the modern?
Sure. There's always a threat. I mean, yes, I agree. And there's subtle ways of controlling prices too. It doesn't necessarily need to be overt. There are all kinds of subtle ways this is done through the regulatory environment, of just making things more difficult, making business more difficult. But it always leads to shortages and black markets and ultimately higher prices. You know, you look at the law of supply and demand is like the law of gravity. It doesn't matter what you think or what you do, you cannot evade it. It's like just a hard absolute. Okay.
Yeah. No, and I don't doubt what you're saying. I just thought that I wondered if this has crossed your mind, that the pandemic has unleashed a certain protection that new arbitrary controls can be created out of the blue. And
well, look, the pandemic is a dictator's dream.
It is.
Tyrannical dictator loves COVID because with COVID 1984, they can do everything. They can monitor our locations. They can shut us in our houses. They can monitor our communications. They've censored all of the social media websites. Any opposing view will be vilified, deplatformed, blackballed, maybe even arrested. So, it's a dictator's dream. There's no question about it. I'm very worried about it.
I will say, just to opine for a second, it does seem to me that the new, if inflation for you and I as regular people is costing us, things are costing us maybe 10% more on average each year, maybe it keeps growing at 10% or more.
It does compound.
I highly doubt that the rents you and I charge our working class people would be allowed to raise at 10% for too many years.
You're saying because the government would step in.
They would just put a limit of growth on rents nationwide. The only reason I ever conceived this to be plausible was because the eviction moratoriums and all of these things were just blanket statements that just came out of the blue and really are lingering in some areas.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's plausible. It's very disconcerting, but guess what will happen? Okay, so if we announce on your show, like as soon as we say that, right, people listening to us right now, okay, the government will step in and control rents. Well, everybody listening who was interested in real estate will now be discouraged and less interested or totally uninterested. They'll say, oh, if they're going to do that, I'm not going to be an investor. Why would I do that? You know, I don't want the government controlling my rent, you know, how much I can charge for rent. So that will create a shortage. And people who are in it now will just get fed up and say, I'm not going to do this anymore. So it always creates shortages and ultimately higher prices. It never works.
It never works. I just, yes, it never really works. So Well, this is the reason that we wanted to get you on the phone and on the Zoom or on a podcast, whichever medium you want to use.
You got it.
Because you are you're a thoughtful fella. You're a thoughtful fella. We look forward to much more great conversations over the years to come. But would you mind sharing with the audience the best way for them to follow up with Jason Hartman and make sure we get they get more of what we've started here and only done a little bit here today?
Sure, sure. So my main website is just my name, jasonhartman.com. I also have that free book for any of your listeners or viewers at pandemicinvesting.com. It's totally free. It's just emailed to you right away. It's a mini book. And it takes all of the principles I've been teaching for the last 18 years and adapts them to the crazy world in which we live. Okay. So make sure you get that. It's just completely free, no strings attached, pandemicinvesting.com. And a lot of people can't believe I was able to get that domain name.
I know. I'm actually pretty impressed by that. But thank you very much, Jason. It's a pleasure to get to know you even better and look forward to seeing you in person in here soon, man. Thank you.
All right. Sounds good. Happy investing, everybody.
Wow. Wow. You made it, everybody. Thank you so much. Eric and I have always said that the people who join us at the end get the pearl and the prize.
Awesome. Folks, don't forget to like and share and love what we're doing on social media. If you want to hit up Josh, you want to hit me up, those are the best places to find us. We are always camped out and ready to talk and put the fire on.
We stand by on social media. But by the way, I know we're on Capital Hacking at Instagram, Capital Hacking on Facebook, and Capital Hacking on my personal favorite, LinkedIn.
Yes, because you can always find major players on LinkedIn. I know your favorite. These are some power players on LinkedIn always.
Gary Vee, he's my boy.
But Gary Vee also talks about the power of Instagram. So if you also want to find us there, we're doing a lot of really cool, sexy things on Instagram. So always you can reach out and DM us on Instagram if you have any questions or you want our time. We are always camped out and living there as well.
We will get right back to you. And just like we always say, you are now part of the team. This is a team that's here to add value to your life, and thank you for adding so much value to our life. Remember to share this podcast. Helps us grow it bigger and bigger each week, and we appreciate you posting a review on iTunes. You cannot believe how powerful that is.
Absolutely. Like and share this with anyone and everyone that you think it will add value to, and we appreciate all of that love and support. And do not forget, with great power comes great responsibility. Woo!